So just the start, if you could just say and spell your name.
Okay. John Albert Berlin. I go by Jack. Last name is B-E-R-L-I-N.
Perfect. Great. All right. And then this is, it's June 19th, 2019, and we are at AcuSoft.
That is correct.
Yes. Great. So first, you're actually the founder and CEO of AcuSoft.
I am. Yes. Okay. I started this company here as Pegasus in 1991. We bought a company in 2008 named AcuSoft, and we adopted that name. So we've been AcuSoft since then.
Okay, good. I want to make sure I have your title and everything correctly. Great. So my first real question is, how long have you been in the Hillsborough County, Tampa Bay area?
Okay, I moved here in 1990, mm-hmm. right after the birth of my first child. And so what is that? Almost 30 years, 29 years, I mm-hmm. guess, in July. So just at 29 years.
Okay. And what brought you here?
This area.
Yeah?
Yeah, I grew up in Savannah, Georgia. I love the coast. Savannah was too small. I was living in Atlanta, Georgia when I got married, and we got pregnant, even though my wife had to do all the work. And I just decided I didn't want to raise a family in Atlanta. So we looked around. Florida was an ideal place to look because we're Southerners. Mm-hmm. So California was kind of off the radar and too expensive. So we looked around and settled on Tampa.
Was there anything like specific about Tampa or the area that really drew you here?
Beaches and warm weather. I mean, you have dreams of coming down here and going to the beach every day, but things called children and work. I think I went to the beach probably 5 times in 10 years. But it's a long way. It's a lot longer way from Tampa to the beach than mm-hmm. you would think. But raising children and starting a business and growing a business, I'm sure I went more often than that. But it was not the same as your dreams of coming to Florida. But it's been a lovely place to live. I've enjoyed every minute of it. We're in the same house we bought in 1990, so it's been good for us.
What were some of your main priorities or goals when you moved to Tampa?
Well, I mean, basically, the only goal that I had was just to have a good place to raise my family. Mm-hmm. I knew very little about the area. I knew it was the type of weather I wanted, and I'm just not a winter person, having grown up in Savannah, Georgia. Mm-hmm. We looked at the East Coast, we looked at the West Coast, and Tampa just seemed ideal. The traffic was a lot better back then than it is now, so I hope that's something we're going to tackle, because it used to be a very big little city that mm-hmm. Was easier to get around in. More congestion now, I guess, certainly in all cities, because it's a problem we all have, but it's still a very close town, and with St. Petersburg 35 minutes mm-hmm. south of us, and Clearwater Beach, 40 minutes west of us, you get some lovely areas of Florida, and we moved close to the airport. We're over in the Town and Country area because we were both traveling at the time, and it was convenient. We still can, 45 minutes before our flight, if we needed to mm-hmm. catch a flight, we can catch a flight. Tampa Airport is wonderful. So it just suited all of our needs for being able to continue our professional lives but also raise our family in an environment that we mm-hmm. wanted to live in.
So you mentioned really briefly that it seems a little bit more congested and things in Tampa now since you moved here. Could you maybe describe some of the changes or development that you've noticed since you've moved to Tampa?
Well, I mean, of course, this whole area, Hillsborough County, the entire area has grown madly. We've added one lane on 275 since I've lived here, and we probably should add, I think they're in the process of trying to add one more. Actually, they added more from Dale Mabry to I-4. They just kind of goofed up there at the Howard Franklin Bridge, where it all necks down to two lanes, and then the Veteran, which is also new since we moved, piling the Veterans on to 275 there makes sort of a mess. And of course, the downtown interchange now is mm-hmm. I don't know if they've ever solved that. It's just don't be anywhere near it between 3:30 and 6:30, I guess. But I try not to be coming back on I-4 towards town anywhere near rush hour either, because it'll back up. Mm-hmm. We're here pretty local. You know, we're on MLK here where we're doing this interview. And mm-hmm. But again, MLK, Hillsborough, 275 between 4 and 6 is traffic.
Absolutely.
Right, so.
So what is, can you show me a little bit about what your actual role is with ELAP?
Oh, okay. ELAP's a funny story, as I explained to you on the phone a month ago, I guess. I was appointed by Kathy Castor in 2004 mm-hmm. to be on the Hillsborough County Parks and Recreation Board. And it has been my honor. I'm still serving on that board. After a couple of years on that board, the chairman moved out of the county, and you're not allowed to be on a county board if you don't live in the county. I became chairman, and the administrative assistant that worked with the Parks Board said, now that you're chairman, you're supposed to go to the ELAP meetings. I said, what's an ELAP? So I said, okay, fine. You know, no good deed goes unpunished, so let me go to another meeting. So I went to a couple of ELAP meetings, and I, of course, fell in love. But the funny story is I asked that administrative assistant, Kathy, mm-hmm. I said, you know, they were sort of surprised to see me there. How many of these ELAP meetings did my predecessor, Doug, go to, who had been the chair of the Parks Board for many years? Mm-hmm. She said, none. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, I see. So it's me. It was just sort of interesting because it was not something the Parks Board had been participating in. And had I known that, I probably would have never gone. Mm-hmm. You know, my time is constricted as everyone's is. This is a volunteer activity. Serving on the Parks Board, and I've served on other county boards, it takes time. You're driving places. The meetings last an hour, hour and a half. But I went and fell in love, as I said. And being the Parks Board representative, I was immediately given a voting seat. Mm-hmm. I have relinquished that recently because the way ELAP allows members to become voting members is you have to go to so many meetings per year and so many meetings initially, I think, in a row. Since I've missed very few in the years and years I've been on there, we just brought a new Parks Board member on, Joe Guidry, mm-hmm. He wanted to be a voting member. He'd been going to ELAP meetings before. That's how I met him. And I drug him into the Parks Board, so I gave him my seat so he could immediately become a voting member of ELAP. But that was how I got introduced. And it's funny because when I first joined the Parks Board, I believe it was January of 2004, mm-hmm. I went to my first Parks Board meeting. It was at the All People Center, which is a wonderful facility. And I walked in there and there's one other new Parks Board member that day, who had just a little bit more experience than I did, and his name was Ed Raddus. He had just retired, I think a year before, as being the Parks Director. They had a new Parks Director, whole different story, I won't get into politics of that, not a well-respected or well-liked Parks Director that didn't last very long, but Ed had just been appointed by one of the county commissioners to be on the Parks Oversight Board, and he and I started the same day. He knew everything there was to know about parks. I knew absolutely nothing about parks. We became fast friends. Mm-hmm. And I think the theme of that meeting and the Parks Board carries through to ELAP. Ed was really excited to have a businessman on the board. Mm-hmm. Typically you get hobbyists, environmentalists, sports people with special interest in their relationship to the park that are appointed by a county commissioner because they run a football league or they mm-hmm. run a baseball team or there's some special interest, there's some tie-in. And he was really excited because I had business experience. probably less than he thought I had, but that's okay. And we became fast friends, and I miss that man still today. We used to do, you know, breakfasts and lunches whenever we could. He got late in life where, of course, he left the Parks Board, not after not too long of a period, because he got to where he couldn't really get around very well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a cherished member of Parks and Rec, of Hillsborough County history, and certainly of ELAP mm-hmm. history, because he was right there, instrumental in getting that the first steps of ELAP happening in this county, which was not easy to do. The first property that became that they were beginning to buy, you know, if you look at Upper Tampa Bay Park, which was right at the cusp of them wanting to start ELAP, that was scheduled to be a whole bunch of townhomes and condominiums. And it was through the actions of Joel Jackson mm-hmm. and Ed Radis, and they decided, after successfully making that regional park and saving some of our bay coastline from development, I think that was sort of the forerunner of them saying, hey, we should. And I don't know the entire history of how they did it, but I'm sure it was a lot of work and a lot of politics mm-hmm. To go get a first referendum, get money raised, and to start buying environmentally sensitive lands. So back to my story, it has become, of all the volunteer boards I've served on, I've served on a lot, it is by far and away where I feel the most useful and I feel the most proud. Because of, you know, the tens of thousands of acres that we've been able to protect. But my story is, again, I'm serving with people that were there at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, Mariella can't serve any longer because she's now a county commissioner, mm-hmm. but which is wonderful. But you have all these dedicated people that you know, Ms. Platt certainly, but lots of others. That started this program, and they're environmentalists, they're scientists, they're real activists, and here I was, you know, just sort of a software business guy. And I think I'm most proud of the fact that I've earned their respect, because I am in awe of the talent and the dedication and just the overall knowledge. Every time I go into one of those rooms and they talk about how you maintain and how you restore and how you protect lands, and that's not my expertise. But what I have been able to bring to ELAP, I think, is some sense of practical project management, some sense mm-hmm. of here's how we can do it in a political way. I was very instrumental with helping them write the last referendum we did, the language to that. I was very proud of the work we did there. You know, you only have so many words, and every word has to mean something, and it has to mean the right things. And I forget what the majority was there, but it was close to 70%, I think, voted for mm-hmm. basically a tax on themselves. So I think I bring a different set of skills to ELAP, and I think that they've given me a great deal more than I've given them. So that's my ELAP story.
So you said earlier, and then a little bit there at the end, that Kathy Castor nominated you or appointed you to the Parks and Rec, and that you have that sort of like business mind, maybe political sense. Why do you think she appointed you to Parks and Rec in the first place?
Well, I love Ms. Castor. I think she's been a good county commissioner as well as a good congressperson for this area. And now it seems to be gaining. She's in charge of the climate mm-hmm. committee and some of those things. I met her through some issues with some of the estuaries. I live on Sweetwater Creek. Mm-hmm. And there had been some problems from previous county commissions. She was District 1 representative, which is where my house is. And I was a spokesperson for my neighborhood, and that's how I got to know her. And we got to talking about the Skyway Park, which is just around the corner, and various things. And, you know, maybe she maybe it was because she respected my judgment. Maybe it was this was a good way to shut him up. I'm not sure. I've had so, you know, I've had great conversations with her, and I know that you know, my daughter has met one of her daughters as well, a similar age. My daughter's a little bit older, but they're good people. Not exactly sure. Maybe, you know, when you're a county commissioner, you've got to fill all these spots. Maybe I was just out in front and the first choice. But for whatever reason, I'm thankful for it, because I have it has gotten me involved in the community in a way I never would have. Mm-hmm. You can get very lost in a company now with 170 employees. You can get very lost in what you're doing and trying to pay your bills and deal with employee issues and grow the business. And we don't do a lot of local, we do very little business locally. You know, we do business around the world, but very little in the west coast of Florida, a couple of customers, not many. So I don't have a lot of ties here. And joining the Parks Board, I started meeting people of sincere interest. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, you want to call them activists, they're not activists. They just really care. Mm-hmm. I met people that cared about things, not because it was going to make them money and not because it was really going to do them any good. It was, they're volunteering their time, they're giving of themselves. I think about Jan Smith and the number of boards that I've served on with her, Pete Fowler, Joel Jackson. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, the county ought to build a statue of that man. And just on down the list, mm-hmm. the people that show up and go to these meetings and give of themselves to better our community, I'm humbled by that. I really am.
Did you have any interest in conservation or environmentalism or anything like that before you started serving on these boards?
Yeah. I am I'm a rare Southern liberal. I guess it's all that liberal arts college degrees, I guess. But I have always fancied myself an environmentalist. I've always taught my kids that, you know, no matter where we go, we take one more thing away than we came with. Mm-hmm. You pick something up, you throw it away, because if we all did that, our beaches would be cleaner, our trails would be cleaner. I've always tried to, you know, we have solar here.
Oh, wow.
We have... We're trying to eliminate single-use plastic.
Those are recyclable plastic.
Those are recyclable. We have compostable flatware.
What?
We're trying not to buy single-use plastic. I wish we would ban plastic bags and everywhere. So I'm an amateur environmentalist because I have a real job. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're raising kids and you're running a company, it's hard to have that third passion. But my kids are all gone now. The business is more grown up. But I think so. I think I've always been a conservationist. Mm-hmm. I think I've always believed that we should leave a place better than we found it. Not to the degree that the folks on the ELAP board that have studied these sciences and are experts and these types of things. It's just really more of a belief system with me. So yes, I try to put my money where my mouth is. I try to put my actions where my beliefs are. They were kindred spirits in that regard, but not in an expertise way, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. I mean, they just knew so much more than I knew. But yes, I did have and would like to think I have always been a believer that we should take care of the only planet we have.
So you said maybe it was like your liberal arts education or something like that. So did you grow up really concerned with the environment or just outside, outdoors a lot, something like that?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Savannah. We were at the beach a lot. You know, we had we boated, we skied, we crabbed, we fished. Mm-hmm. Typical Southern kid from Savannah. But I think it's always bothered me to see trash floating in the water, mm-hmm. to see somebody leave you know, throw a cigarette butt out of a car to, yes, it's just, I don't know if it's, it was just genetically built in or it was just my parents. I don't know what causes it, but it is, I can't remember it ever starting. It must have been ingrained at some point.
Yeah.
Early on. It would make me sick to put a piece of trash I would put it in my pocket and find a trash can. I can't understand leaving it someplace for somebody else, but that's just me.
So, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit more about ELAP. What do you see as the main goals or priorities of ELAP now?
Well, I served on the ELAP, the latest strategic initiative. Our county administrator, Mike Merrill, came to ELAP and he said, how much is enough, right? In other words, we have 60, you probably know more than I do, 1,000 acres under protection. Our role, our strategic vision has to change.
Okay.
Because the county is more grown up, it's more occupied, there's more people, there's less land. So we have just gone through rewriting, I don't even think it's fully adopted yet, a new strategic vision for ELAP, where we're basically focusing on those pieces of property that would make a real difference, would add to an existing ELAP site, would add to a corridor. So it is changing. It is changing to where we just can't say, you know, anything that's nominated we'll look at. Mm-hmm. We are looking at tracks now that really would make a difference to the overall environmental situation in Hillsborough County. We don't have unlimited funds. So I think, you know, the ELAP mission now is to try to add those strategic parcels that, if we can get them, I mean, this is a volunteer program and owners don't have to sell to us. We can't eminent domain a piece of property. So someone has to be willing to sell to us. Our purchasing is limited by fair value rules. We can't overpay, you know, we can't really overpay for a property. We have to, you know, we're using taxpayer money. So there's all kinds of rules and regs on that. But what we really are focused on now is completing key parcels, looking for significant tracts that would add to a wildlife corridor or would complete certainly things that would add to the watershed quality. I mean, the Cone Ranch, which is now called the Lower Green Swamp Preserve, was a wonderful, you know, originally that was being targeted to become a major sports complex. And I served on the Cone Ranch committee and as one of the technical advisors, which was kind of funny. But it was interesting to go through that process and see the county make the right decision of, no, this land just absolutely has to be, you know, restored and protected. It's just too much of our watershed. It's that lower green swamp is what's feeding, you know, fresh water into Hillsborough River, so into our aquifer. So it's going to be interesting to see how we change, because there's not a whole lot more that we are going to be able to purchase. There's just less land. I do hope we're able to get a couple of key parcels that we're looking at. The wildlife corridors and the trails that go through wildlife corridors are important to us. I'm hoping the state of Florida will also link up. They're now talking about trails, you know, cross the peninsula and cross counties, not just county. So that's kind of where ELAP is today, is really focusing on just a couple of key strategic parcels, or what they call inholdings, something that would, if it's adjacent to an existing ELAP property and we're able to bring it in and expand the property, that's an easy one for us to do typically.
So you say you're like really now focusing on these strategic corridors, these connections, these things like that. And this is a volunteer program doing like that. And ELAP historically had been pretty popular with voters, with the public, and acquiring parcels of land and things like that. Do you still feel that community support? Do you still feel that political support in the area for acquiring these key pieces?
Especially after the last election,
yes.
You know, may we be so fortunate going forward,
mm-hmm.
Not to get political here on tape.
Yes,
I don't think Hillsborough County understands what we've done and what a leader we are in nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Our ELAP program is second to none. Mm-hmm. There's not a county in the country that, I mean, for us to have, again, I wish I knew the exact numbers, but 60-something out, 1,000 acres of protected land. We are a large county, but still that's a very large chunk of land.
Absolutely.
Allowing us to protect species that are unique to our area, protect our aquifer and our water quality. I think the community, if we were to do another referendum, we'd have the same level of support. I do believe that for the most part, people believe that, you know, they're living in Florida because they want clean water. They want it to be a nice environment. When you look at things like red tide,
mm-hmm.
you realize that's nothing other than us not controlling stormwater runoff from all over the state of Florida, and we're feeding algae all kinds of fertilizers. So one of the causes, not being a scientist, I won't make any scientific claims, but certainly if we treat our waterways or we treat our environment as nothing other than a trash can or a toilet,
mm-hmm.
we will reap those horrible, horrible results. And if we do what we're doing with ELAP, where we treat enough of this land with respect and keep it in a restored state, we'll reap the benefits of clean water and clean air, or cleaner water and cleaner air. I mean, we still are growing at a rapid rate from a population standpoint. So that's going to always encroach, environmental areas. It means more people using trails and more people
mm-hmm.
using cars. And so we'll have to deal with all that. Come on, Tesla, let's build more battery cars. But I think the support is there. I mean, just to go back to your original question, I think that if we were to put another referendum up, which they'll probably never let us do, but if we were, I think we'd get the same level of support because I think people see it. They probably don't have it front of mind, but when you say 62,000 acres and regional parks and what we're providing and what it does to protect air and water, I think that we would stay at that better than two-thirds support level.
Okay. And we touched on it briefly, but why do you think Hillsborough County residents or even Floridians in general are concerned with the environment or are supportive of these conservation efforts?
Well, I'd like to think that they understand the ramifications if we're not. I don't know. Because, as you know, we're a very partisan state.
Mm-hmm.
We're as purple as they come, mm-hmm. 1 or 2% either way. And one side is typically not an environmental side, and one side typically is. Why when you're, of course, cities typically are a little bit more liberal than more rural areas. But even so, why with a pretty even split partisan divide, you're able to get close to 70% support,
mm-hmm.
especially when you're talking about raising a potential raise of property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's wonderful. I would like to think that all people, all of us can think something bigger than ourselves, can be thinking about our children and grandchildren, can be thinking about just the overall world we live in, and maybe they can put, partisan things aside and pocketbook issues aside and say, hey, we're only talking about another couple of pennies here. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it is stunning, and I don't know the answer.
Okay. That's no problem. So does ELAP ever concern itself with maybe other environment issues you talked about? Like, does ELAP ever get concerned with what they can do about red tide in the area or climate change or anything like that?
No, that is outside our purview. We have a very, very narrow purview as an ELAP committee. Matter of fact, it has to be non-political. Mm-hmm. We cannot take stances. Our fiduciary duty as a board is the oversight of the funds that are dedicated and the work and these properties. It really is a fiduciary oversight board, and we're making recommendations, of course, to county commissioners, both on the Parks Board as well as on ELAP. They get the final say on just about anything when it comes to money. We are an independent oversight board charged with trying to squeeze every damn dime as far as we can. I don't know the numbers, but I think it's 20 or 30% of the money we've spent as ELAP did not come from Hillsborough County, but came from matching grants and other grant programs, state and federal. I know we get Swift Mud grants. We get, of course, Florida Forever funds have been dried up for a while. I'm hoping that will come back. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to stretch those referendum dollars that we've raised. I don't believe we've added since the last referendum. I don't think we've added even a penny to property taxes. I think we've been able to stretch it. I think that we've not issued all the bonds that we had the capability of issuing, but we've been able to stretch the taxpayers' money, you know, very, very efficiently. Kudos to the real estate people at Hillsborough County that do the negotiation for these things, and the folks at in Conservation Department that are always seeking grants, matching grants for restoration. You know, we put in so many dollars, we're getting grants from other places, and that's allowed us to get a whole lot more than what we've raised through bond revenue through the referendum.
So it's been really cooperative in that sense, the success of ELAP.
It's work. It depends on the administrations in Tallahassee. Florida Forever is not being funded, I don't think. Mm-hmm. At least it hasn't been for some years. Maybe that will change. That would be good. So the grants have dried up. Swift Mud, of course, gets a great deal of money for restoration because they're charged with our water quality. And certainly we've done impact studies on what ELAP lands bring as far as value to the community, as far as, you know, water quality and air quality and the return on our dollar. Mr. Turberville's the gentleman, or you can ask Ross about this as well. They can give you the facts and figures on that, but we have gotten a real bargain. We're also exploring carbon credits and other things where we can get funds from doing carbon banking and which is basically trying to take carbon dioxide and get it out of the atmosphere by, you know, planting certain kinds of trees and foliage and those types of things, and we are getting a great deal more value than we're spending, and future generations will owe a debt of gratitude to the people that did this some decades ago. I'm not sure they owe a debt of gratitude to me, but certainly to some of the founders of this program. I certainly owe them a debt of gratitude, and I've told them, the ones that are still living, I've told them that. The foresight to do this and to put this together and to make it the program that it is, as well run as it is and as well maintained it is absolutely, it's astounding, really is.
What do you see as the future of environmental conservation in Florida at large? You talked about really hoping that there'd be partnerships with other parts of Florida and linking up these certain areas. But what do you see as Florida's conservation future?
You're talking about North Florida or South Florida?
Either or all or whatever you
very different. You know, it's very different. The politics are very different in this state. But I would hope that we would understand that tourism is really important mm-hmm. in the state of Florida. I would love to see us say, not wait for a crisis to develop, and red tide might already be a mm-hmm. crisis. I don't know. We'll see if it comes back. I know when I can't be on the beach because I'm very sensitive. I can't breathe it.
Mm-hmm.
I will get to where I just can't breathe if I'm anywhere near the coast, and we've got a bloom going, and it affects your respiratory system.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way about climate change. We should not, every month and year we wait, it's more expensive to fix. Why wouldn't, if we know we're going to have to tackle it, why wouldn't we be proactive as opposed to reactive?
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way about state and county government. Transportation will be more expensive next year than it is this year, and 10 years from now, even more expensive. So if it is something we've resolved to do, then let's do it. As far as environmental things, I would love to see us get together and put all partisan politics aside and say, you know what, if we, the best asset we have in state of Florida is our environment,
mm-hmm.
our clean bays, our clean rivers, our clean lakes, our clean Gulf of Mexico. Why don't we act that way? Because
mm-hmm.
we don't. And it would make a lot more sense to put a few dollars a home stormwater fee
mm-hmm.
like they have in South Florida.
Yeah.
Fort Lauderdale has a $75 per home stormwater fee to mm-hmm. clean up their waterways. I think in here we were very proud for a dozen years not to ever raise our stormwater fee. I won't mention the county commissioner that told me that. But I think we've just recently doubled it. I think we're up to like $24 per home stormwater fee. But we have simple solutions to these problems. Simple,
yeah.
And not expensive. The outside here on MLK is a rain culvert.
Oh.
Right? They're all over the place. They're little drains, and whatever's on the road when it rains, oil, leaves, trash, plastic bottles, goes straight to the Hillsborough River, unimpeded. The Clean Water Act of 1976 said you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Here we are in 2019, and we have direct pipes all around this, 4,000 of them, feeding Tampa Bay with whatever runs off. For a few dollars per home, I mean, we have a $200 million backlog for stormwater projects in this county. Fund that. Yes, you want to clean up the environment, it's easily, they have all kinds of systems that are non-expensive. It requires putting baskets in here, and it means a mm-hmm. truck that comes and cleans them out,
yeah.
and carbon rings to keep the oil out of those. But yes, you could do it. You could do it for not a lot of money. So yes, we can either wait until the tourists stop coming,
mm-hmm.
and then it becomes really expensive, or we can get together and say, you know what, let's all chip in a few dollars per year, per home, and see if we can't we stand up when we're on the river walk, and instead of seeing trash, you see the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You see the manatees. You see the dolphin. Whatever you want to see. We could do things like that. There's all kinds of things called living shorelines that we could do, which, you know, we are a seawall community, right? Instead of doing seawalls, you can do plantings. You can do rock walls that allow natural habitat to develop, and it actually helps. You know, if oysters come back, they clean the water. So seawalls keep turtles from nesting. There's all kinds of things that seawalls do that are just not. I mean, I'm throwing out just a few things that
yeah.
are top of mind. But no, what I would love to see us do as a county, as a region, as a state, as a country, as a globe,
mm-hmm.
Is to have the foresight to say doing some smart things now will be a whole lot better than trying to clean up a mess later. And I would love to see us do more of that. Yes.
So this might be some of the things you already said, but you have a pretty unique perspective of ELAP and conservation, because you're not an environmental scientist, you're not involved in like water management, things like that. You're a businessman. And you've talked about, you know, you have that business sense and you've been a part of the political strategic sense of it. What then in your mind is the best strategy for conservation efforts?
Well, I think it's twofold. I mean, one, you have to elect the right people, but then mm-hmm. I think you have to figure out, and it probably has the people you elect, but you have to figure out how to get environmental issues front of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always going to fund police and fire here mm-hmm. as a county. They're not going to be cut. They're mm-hmm. going to be funded, and so it becomes a fight for dollars in the budget. And I think what you have to do is you have to convince people, and that's true about transportation, it's true about healthcare, and it's true about the environment. You have to have some leadership that's willing to go out and convince people that this is a priority. And I think that's kind of what I try to bring to the ELAP committee a little bit, is that practical side of, you know, how do we build a compromise that's going to move our efforts forward. Sometimes when you're an environmentalist, perhaps you and passionate about it, you can let some zealousness get in the way of compromise. So I'd like to think that I bring a voice of, I don't want to say reason, because I typically agree that we need to do all of these things, but when you know you can't do all of these things, you don't want to let the perfect get in the way of the good. Mm-hmm. You've got to figure out a way to move the ball forward somehow, even if it's not everything you want. You still have to be willing to fight for and accept compromises, as long as those compromises are moving you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see us somehow figure out how to make environmental. I would love to see a state campaign, maybe the next governor's race, where environmental issues were a higher priority. Taking the Everglades away from the sugar industry or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it would be. Restoring, you know, try to save the coral reef off of southern Florida through runoff again. Our number one environmental problem here is runoff. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is runoff. And it's not something we don't know how to fix. Yeah. And it's not even expensive to fix. That's what's sort of scary about it. You know, you've got to restore lands, first of all, because that allows water to permeate and not just run off carrying whatever it carries. I mean, you want retention areas, you want holding areas. Mm-hmm. You want wild areas. When they chopped up the Everglades, they canal. What they did is they ran canals to run the water out of there. Mm-hmm. That's not allowing it to be filtered naturally through the plants and animals that exist in the Everglades. So the same thing exists when you have seawalls and grass up to the seawalls. You don't have those marshy areas that would act as natural breeding grounds and natural filtration systems with oysters and, again, talk to the scientists, don't talk to me. I'm giving you a layman's view. But I would love for us to understand that it is not only the right thing to do because it's our planet and we should protect it, but it's the only thing to do because our economic well-being will ultimately live or die based on what we do. Maybe not this year, maybe not in 10 years, but if we're not careful, we're going to say, oh my God, what have we done? And then it's going to be really expensive, and i.e. perhaps climate change.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the achievements in ELAP that you're most proud of?
Cone Ranch. Cone absolutely. Ranch? The Lower Green Swamp Preserve. I kid those guys. That was a massive win for us to get that large of a piece of property and to keep it from being developed. Mm-hmm. There was one plan at one point in time they were going to put hunting lodges and make it a hunting ranch or something like that. And then another plan they were going to put a giant sports complex on there. And all those sounded really great, and until I started attending those meetings, and I started realizing what an environmental jewel it was. So I'm very proud for the small role that I played in making sure that the county commission did the right thing there, which was put it in ELAP. They didn't have to. It was all their call, but it was an overwhelming recommendation from the what was called the Cone Ranch Committee that we put that land in the ELAP and protect it, and that's what they did. So, and those were many meetings, mm-hmm. public hearings and meetings and presentations from all sides, including the ones that wanted to develop the land and put some private residences on it and hunting lodges on it and those types of things. So it worked out. It worked out pretty well. And the referendum. I was very proud of my participation there. I'm always very proud, and I don't know that I can point to instances when I'm able to figure out a way. Things come up in our meetings from time to time, and we get gridlocked. Mm. Let's do this, let's do that. No, let's do that. And I'm always, I think that's been my role since I've been there. I'm most proud when I can figure out a way to navigate through the middle, and we all get a unanimous, yeah, let's do that, and mm-hmm. and everybody gets on board with instead of, you know, two sides fighting over a thing to do, we're able to come together with some sort of compromise or some sort of way forward that everybody can get on board. Mm-hmm. I can't point to any, but it's happened a number of times, both in site selection. I'm on the site selection committee as well as mm-hmm. the general ELAP committee. And I've been pleased I've been able to contribute that way, because they can tell me, you know, what endangered species are on there and what it would cost to maintain and what the land should look like and whether it's, you know, high soils or low soils or this soil or that. That's great. I learn a lot. I think it's wonderful. Let's protect it all. But I think my role and my contribution is, how do we do it effectively? And we move the ball. I think I've helped us be more effective and get more done. So,
I'm going to ask you just a little bit, maybe more specifically about like Cone Ranch. You called it an environmental jewel. What can you just describe, especially for the people who might not know what it is? Like, what is Cone Ranch? Why is it? Why was it so important?
Well, it was part of the north side of our county is. We have the Green Swamp.
Mm-hmm.
As it drifts into Hillsborough County, I guess from Polk, I'm not sure about borders, but Pasco, I get them confused. But anyway, and again, I've not been to the preserve.
Mm.
I have threatened to go many times. I've seen presentation after presentation of restoration efforts, and at the, I think we still have an active cattle grazing contract. We did at one mm-hmm. point in time. I think we still do, because as we restore, we're restoring in piece by piece by piece, and we've let the cattle contract stay again to raise funds for our restoration effort.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when that's scheduled to end, but I think the biggest win there was the fact that this was part of a real feeder of our aquifer.
Mm.
The fact that it was swamp, it was a lot of wetland. Wetlands are the hardest thing to protect mm-hmm. because you can't build on a wetland. You can't pave a wetland. And if you do pave them, they're not wetlands anymore. So I think the biggest win there for us is what we did to protect the aquifer and the water quality in Hillsborough County. I forget how many acres that property is. I want to say it's like 20,000, but I'm not exactly sure. But it was a huge plot of land. And in that area, in that region, with its importance to the Hillsborough River and to our aquifer, and what we're doing now to restore it, it'll even be more important. That's why I just think it was a huge win for us.
Yeah.
And just the sheer size.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
There are not plots like that left in Hillsborough County.
So we've gone through, it's been great, and we've gone through a lot of great things. But I really want to know, what are some memorable moments for you in ELAP, outside of Cone Ranch, perhaps?
Memorable moments. I love the people there.
Yeah.
I mean, the memorable moments is seeing somebody you haven't seen in 5 or 6 months and getting a hug. Mm-hmm. Memorable moments. You know, getting everybody to agree. I wish I had some specific examples, because I really don't, but to agree that we're going to move forward on a purchase. Mm-hmm. It looks like the buyer and seller have agreed on a price, and they're going to take our offer, and it's going to happen. And seeing, you know, going on site to see the few preserves that I have seen. I have tried to figure out a way that we could preserve some smaller plots in this county, but it's outside the purview of ELAP, but I have talked to a number of ELAP folks about that. Mm-hmm. I don't have any specific examples. No, it's funny, because I look at my calendar and I'll see an ELAP meeting and I go, oh my gosh, I get that afternoon shot. And I get down there and I get just so much love. You know, just from the whole feeling of a group of people that are getting together to do something good. Mm-hmm. So, and I always say, what was I complaining about? I'm blessed to be a part of this group. I'm blessed that they accept me as the outsider that I am, and they've become good friends, and they've done good work, and I am a hanger-on of their efforts. You're talking to me because I was lucky enough to get associated with what they were doing, mm-hmm. and be a small part of it. And I think the applause all goes to those early believers, those people that paved this trail and have kept it moving. And ELAP committee is now mostly about restoration. Mm-hmm. We are looking at a few plots. And it's changing now. So it's certainly the early days were the hardest, and now it's changing to, it's just easier. Mm-hmm. I hope that we're lucky enough. There's a couple of other sites that we're still pursuing that I think would be real good additions. In the Northwest, there's a old water field, I think owned mm-hmm. by Clearwater or one of the Pinellas County governments, I think. Our city governments over there own a water field, and I think we're negotiating to possibly bring that in to ELAP, but it also could be apartments, mm-hmm. you know, just as easily. So hopefully we'll be able to add a few more parcels. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it has been an honor to serve on that committee and to be a part of it.
So this interview and the whole collection and everything, we're really hoping that people can use this to listen and learn, and also for their own research and those sorts of things. So is there any final message you'd like to leave for people listening to this, or any takeaway you wish they would get from this, something like that?
Well, I'm hoping that they'll listen to people, maybe not me, but the Joels and the Jans and the mm-hmm. Mariellas. I mean, Marielle is perfect, because she's mm-hmm. Sierra Club, has her own small business, joined ELAP, got fed up and ran for public office, and is now a county commissioner. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's my encouragement is, don't just sit back and complain, join. Mm-hmm. If you're upset, or even if you're not upset, I was never upset. I cared about the environment. I somehow was lucky enough to join this group, and lucky enough that they accepted me. But participate in this planet you're in, participate in your community, participate in the process. Elections matter. Mm-hmm. We've learned that the hard way. The voting is the minimum you should do. You should also be willing to speak for your convictions and put some of your time and effort into, you know, if environment's important to you, or transportation or healthcare or whatever it happens to be, then go participate. Mm-hmm. Don't just sit back and complain and hope that somebody else will take care of it for you. The fact that, I don't know, over the years, 30 or 40 people have driven ELAP for, what, 3 decades now? We're a county of how many millions? More people should go to the ELAP. Mm-hmm. It's open to everyone, and they're publicly posted. You can go to Parks Board's meeting. You can go to transportation meetings. You can participate. And in some of these boards, like ELAP, if you go to enough of them, you become a voting member. So you can have your voice heard, but only if you speak. Mm-hmm. So that's my. I would urge everyone to be the next one that's being interviewed by students at USF or faculty, I assume, or faculty assistants or whatever you are from USF, but be the next person being interviewed for some great thing that's happening in our community. And again, I think it's an honor that you're talking to me, but I think it's really, really great that you've captured a lot of the essence of who made the ELAP happen and possible for the community. And this is a forever thing. Mm-hmm. That land is protected. Mm-hmm. No one can touch it. Every bloody acre that we can put into that, in Hillsborough County or Florida or United States, or, maybe we'll do something in Brazil. But if we can protect that land, it's forever protected, and is it forever doing us a benefit of trying to make this a better environment and better planet. So, yeah, get involved.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah.
Been my pleasure.